Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy welcomes Giles Milton presenting Churchill's Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, the true story of a top-secret organization founded in London whose purpose was to plot the destruction of Hitler's war machine through spectacular acts of sabotage. This gripping narrative of adventure and derring-do is also perhaps the last great untold story of the Second World War. Tuesday, March 6th at 7 p.m. More at theivybookshop.com or 410-377-2966.
Hello again from the Baltimore Sun. I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Roughly Speaking, episode 365. It's Monday, March 5th, 2018, the day after the 2018 Academy Awards. Our film critics Linda DeLibero and Christopher Llewellyn Reed join us to talk about the Oscar winners and the messages about change coming out of the ceremony on Hollywood's biggest night. First, a couple of moments from the awards. The romantic fantasy The Shape of Water, which had 13 Oscar nominations, won for Best Picture. Here's the Mexican director, Guillermo del Toro.
Growing up in Mexico as a kid, I was a big admirer of foreign film like E.T. or William Wyler or Douglas Sirk or Frank Capra. And a few weeks ago, Steven Spielberg said, if you find yourself there, if you find yourself in the podium, remember that you are part of a legacy, that you're part of a world of filmmakers, and be proud of it. I'm very, very proud. I was a kid enamored with movies. Growing up in Mexico, I thought this could never happen. It happens. And I want to tell you, everyone that is dreaming of a parable, of using genre fantasy to tell the stories about the things that are real in the world today, you can do it. This is a door. Kick it open and come in.
Jordan Peele won for his script for Get Out, and that made him the first African-American to win for Best Original Screenplay.
This means so much to me. I stopped writing this movie about 20 times because I thought it was impossible. I thought it wasn't going to work. I thought no one would ever make this movie. But I kept coming back to it because I knew if someone let me make this movie, that people would hear it and people would see it.
The 90th Academy Awards was the first to take place in the post-Harvey Weinstein era since early October, when the New York Times revealed a long history of sexual harassment and allegations of sexual attacks by producer Harvey Weinstein, for many years Hollywood's heaviest heavyweight. There has been a cascade-turned flood of stories about powerful men in entertainment and politics abusing women. Three of the women who accused Weinstein spoke between awards last night. Here are two of them, Ashley Judd and Salma Hayek.
The changes we are witnessing are being driven by the powerful sound of new voices, of different voices, of our voices, joining together in a mighty chorus that is finally saying, time's up.
So we salute those unstoppable spirits who kicked ass and broke through the biased perceptions against their gender, their race, and ethnicity to tell their stories.
Frances McDormand won her second Oscar for her performance in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. McDormand asked all the women who were nominated for awards to stand up in the Dolby Theater.
So I'm hyperventilating a little bit. If I fall over, pick me up because I've got some things to say. If I may be so honored to have all the female nominees in every category stand with me in this room tonight. The actors, Meryl, if you do it, everybody else will, come on. The filmmakers, the producers, the directors, the writers, the cinematographer, the composers, the songwriters, the designers. Come on.
We all have stories to tell and projects we need financed. Don't talk to us about it at the parties tonight. Invite us into your office in a couple days, or you can come to ours, whichever suits you best, and we'll tell you all about them. I have two words to leave with you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Inclusion rider.
Those are some of the highlights of Sunday night's ceremony. Here with me on Monday are Linda DeLibero, Director of Film and Media Studies at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, and Christopher Llewellyn Reed, Professor and Chair of the Department of Film and Moving Image at Stevenson University, just outside of Baltimore. Linda, how are you today?
I'm fine.
All right, thanks for getting here this morning. And Chris, how are you feeling?
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay, a lot of ground to cover here. I don't know where to begin. How about just general impressions? Like, what did you take out of the awards last night? Do you want to start with that?
Sure. So
a lot of messages here, right?
A lot of messages. One of my great takeaways is that the ceremony itself was actually rather boring. I did not think Jimmy Kimmel did a particularly noteworthy job as host, though there were no faux pas. He didn't embarrass himself, except that he wasn't that funny. I liked a lot of the pieces that reminded us of what Hollywood can be and what Hollywood has done. I appreciated that montage about diversity and inclusion. I thought that was a relatively interesting way to do that. I really loved the back and forth presentation between Maya Rudolph and Tiffany Haddish. If you're going to call out our country's history of racism, I think you should do it in a way that grabs people's attention with great humor, and they were delightful up there. I think next year either they should host or Kumail Nanjiani should host because they were the standouts for me of the show. I will talk later about sort of the awards that I was disappointed in, but I'll let Linda give her impression.
Well, first of all, I think Kumail Nanjiani should just be running everything. I thought he was so perfect. And Tiffany Haddish and Maya Rudolph were great, too. And it pointed up the problems with Jimmy Kimmel. And, you know, Jimmy Kimmel is up there to do precisely that, to sort of keep things calm and orderly and not be too funny or outrageous and just be a host. And in that respect, I thought he did fine. But when somebody would come out and just strike the right note and be really funny and amusing and yet have a very clear point, it pointed up his deficiencies. Other than that, yeah, it was boring. It was really long. There was a lot of, you know, genuine and sincere heartfelt feeling about Me Too and Time's Up. And yet there was Kobe Bryant accepting an award. That, to me, was the most jarring moment. Somebody who had been accused of rape in 2003. Also, I didn't see it, but Ryan Seacrest on the red carpet. Apparently, celebrities, A-list celebrities, were fleeing from the sight of him. And, of course, Gary Oldman, domestic abuser, at least according to, you know, his wife had charged him with domestic abuse.
Beating her with a telephone, I believe, was one of the charges.
And so you have these strange moments of dissonance. So that was my impression, but I stuck through it all the way through to the end. So
there are two awards I want to talk about with the both of you. Three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri. Frances McDormand winning her second Oscar. The first one was for Fargo. For her performance in this film, and Sam Rockwell, Best Supporting Actor for this film, a film that you both panned.
So, I as I said before, I liked half of this movie, and then the second half I disliked so much that I ended up not liking the movie at all. But if you had to give two awards to the movie, at least they gave them to people who, in general, are actors I admire.
Had to? The Academy's obligated?
If they felt the need to reward the film, they gave it to Frances McDormand, who's an actress I always admire, and Sam Rockwell, who's an actor I've enjoyed in many performances, if not this one.
Well, what was Frances McDormand's competition?
She was up against Meryl Streep, who I love, but certainly doesn't need more recognition. Saoirse Ronan from Lady Bird, Margot Robbie from I, Tonya, who was very deserving. The competition was not weak.
It doesn't sound like it.
Oh, now, Sally Hawkins from Shape of Water.
Yes, that's right.
Thank you. Now, speaking of Shape of Water, you know, I disagree with, what's your name?
Chris. My name is Chris.
Yeah. I disagree with Chris this film. I felt conned. That's not a good feeling to walk out of the theater with.
I would rather other films had won, but I think it's a beautifully designed film. So winning for production design, and I love the music, so winning for music.
Music is great.
It was great. I think Sally Hawkins probably should have won because her performance was brilliant. I have issues with the film. It would not have been my choice. However, compared to some of the films that could have won, and I love Guillermo del Toro in general and all he represents with his love of movies, so I was not angry at the award. I just would have rather other films had won.
Yeah. you know, I like Guillermo del Toro as a person. I don't know him, but he seems like a really nice guy. And, but I'm not a big fan of his films, and I wasn't a particular fan of this film. And, you know, I have to say, I probably lost my Oscar poll last night because I thought Three Billboards was going to win. And in that respect, I was actually, I wasn't happy about the fact that I aired, but I was...
You were hunching that Hollywood was going to pick that
yeah,
as the best picture.
Well, Gold Derby had it all the way up to the end as its number one pick. The mm-hmm. odds were in its favor. And, you know, I, as anybody who listened to our last podcast, everybody knows that I despise that movie. So in that respect, I was happier that Shape of Water won. But I think it's a very crowd-pleasing film that has all the right, quote-unquote, messages and is innocuous. And, you know, it's a sweet little fairy tale. But I think it's a great movie? No, I don't.
Again, beautifully designed film. So I wanted it to win the award. It did win before winning Best Picture, which was Best Production Design. I was so happy about that. You know, speaking of crowd-pleasing films, though, Linda, Get Out was the real crowd pleaser mm-hmm. among the nominees. Yeah. It was, I think, the biggest money earner, and at least it won for best screenplay. But that or Lady Bird, as people who listened to our last show know, would have been my top two choices.
Yeah, so, Lady Bird got overlooked here.
It completely snubbed. Yeah.
Because back in the summer or fall, that's the film everyone was talking about. All right, here's a question for you. Does Me Too plus Time's Up plus Oscar So White from a couple of years ago equal a new day in Hollywood, a sustaining, enduring change, more diversity, a power shift in Hollywood?
I don't know. I think it's best to be skeptical. I read a really great piece in Forbes last week, and I can't remember who wrote it, but it was really about the history of these moments when you have mega successful blockbuster films with black actors, you know, back in the 80s, the Eddie Murphy movies, these, you know, juggernauts. And everybody said, okay, this is it. This is going to change Hollywood. Everything's going to be different from now on. Look, a black actor can open a movie and it can make money. And there was, he pointed out example after example after example, and saying that, you know, this hope because of Black Panther, let's wait and see. I mean, I sincerely hope that just the fact that people will keep speaking out about it over and over again and shaming producers and directors and the people and the studio heads who run Hollywood, if you keep shaming them, they'll have to do something. And if you start to put women and minorities in positions of power in the studios, then you can have change. You can't, you know, I don't believe change is going to happen because a few, you know, people like Ava DuVernay were given millions and millions of dollars to direct a film. It's only going to change when Ava DuVernay is running a studio or is the top of the food chain in Hollywood.
Right. However, one change that we are seeing from the 80s, and I agree with you, we don't know if it will be sustained change, is that Ava DuVernay is being given much more money as an African-American female director than such people have been given in the past. And with Ryan Coogler getting Black Panther, this is different than merely Eddie Murphy starring in a film or Will Smith starring in a film. Now they're being given the keys to the kingdom, just a few of them, but I think it's potentially a wider opening than before. Again, time will tell. But Wrinkle in Time, speaking of time, opens this Friday.
Hey, tell me about that, would you?
Directed by Ava DuVernay, based on the much-beloved book by Madeleine L'Engle. It opens this Friday. She has cast it with a more diverse cast than is in the actual book. It stars Gugu Mbatha-Raw and Chris Pine. And we'll see how it does. It's been getting good advanced reviews. What I'm saying is that simply this is a film being made for as big a budget as any of the other mega blockbusters of recent years, just like Black Panther was. And it is cast with a more diverse array of actors than we generally have seen in these kinds of
films.
That's
what's important.
So I'm just saying that if it does well, perhaps, again, time will tell, it will represent.
And I guess if I would say that let's propose that, you know, I don't want this to happen, but let's just say it did fail. It did lose money. when I'll know things will have changed when the immediate response is not, we can't give money to a black woman again to direct a film like this.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
And that's the real test in terms of that level of filmmaking, the people who are the creatives. If you fail, you failed on your own merits, and next time it doesn't matter. That's not the decision-making process that goes into giving minorities and women some power in Hollywood.
Right.
What does Black Panther portend?
Well, one of the great things about Black Panther's success is that it's doing really well overseas, which means that this debunks one of the arguments was that, okay, Will Smith or other people, you know, their films do well in the United States, but films starring actors of color don't do well overseas. I don't know where this myth came from, since Will Smith tended to do quite well as well. So that might represent a further erosion. Again, these are all slowly eroding cliffs, further erosion of that argument. We'll see. Again, I refuse to make predictions like Linda.
One more thing about the Oscar. Gary Oldman's Winston Churchill in Darkest Hour. I was thinking about him. And I was thinking about Churchill, who's been portrayed many times in film and on television. So it's a tough gig for an actor in 2017 to come forward and portray Winston Churchill, I think. But Daniel Day-Lewis's Lincoln from a few years ago, directed by Spielberg, was incredible. But no one knows what Lincoln sounded like. There's some ideas about it. People have these ideas about what Lincoln looked like from the film portrayals of him. And I was thinking about how that was just so much better than what I saw in Old Man. In Old Man, I also almost saw a caricature of Winston Churchill.
Mm-hmm. And so do I.
Yeah. And Linda? Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a collection of mannerisms inside a fat suit.
Yeah. And Linda?
Yeah, I thought it was the kind of performance that wins Oscars. It's traditionally very hammy, over the top, very showy performance. I didn't believe for one second that this guy was Winston Churchill. I'm sorry. And I thought there were so many. I mean, Timothy Chalamet's performance was just so stunning in Call Me By Your Name. Daniel Day-Lewis is in a category all by himself. And, you know, the fact that this kind of old-fashioned portrayal of a historic figure is still winning Oscars, I don't know. That, to me, is really retrograde.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I just wanted to single out a couple of awards that I thought were very well-deserved, in particular, Best Cinematography. Finally, Roger Deakins, after years of being nominated, won for Blade Runner 2049. I thought there were other, perhaps more worthy contenders this year, but that man has deserved an award long before
this.
That's
like a lifetime achievement.
That basically was. I also want to single out the Best Documentary Short called Heaven is a Traffic Jam on the 405. You can find it online. It is an exquisite documentary portrait of a 50-something female artist with a myriad of issues, neurological and otherwise, and it's a tribute to her life and work, and I just love that film so much. And then, of course, I'm a big fan of Coco, so I was not unhappy for its success.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree.
We'll see Linda and Chris again soon.
Okay, thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, guys. Linda DeLibero is Director of Film and Media Studies at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. Christopher Llewellyn Reed is Professor and Chair of the Department of Film and Moving Image at Stevenson University, just outside the city. That's our show for now. Your thoughts are welcome by email, Twitter, or on Facebook. Please review our show on iTunes if you get a chance. For producers Steve Early and Quinn Kelly, I'm Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking, and we'll see you again soon.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at 6080 Falls Road, located at the intersection of Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. More information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.